Hello and welcome to Stranger Stopping Strangers, podcast number 74. A big welcome back to anybody who's returning and thanks for stopping in to anybody who's new this week. Well, this week's podcast guest is very close to home. I get a chance to talk to and share thoughts and music with my husband, Rob, who is a huge music fanatic. And I mean, man, we cover so many musicians and just so much musical ground in our conversation. And he is a ride or die Beatle fan, but is not a deadhead. So much fun to be able to talk about, you know, what it's like to be so into music. We talk about his respect for the Grateful Dead as musicians and, you know, really all the different incarnations and iterations of the band. You know, it sounds a little to me like love for Jerry Garcia. I'm a big fan over there and get to play some amazing music. And then lastly, of course, what it's like to be married to a hardcore deadhead who, you know, has been making a podcast and chases live music as much as possible. You know, he has been offering to be a guest for, you know, really a couple of years now. And I always thought it was maybe, you know, a favor if there was a gap between episodes, guests, or even just a joke. But after having this hiatus for a few months where I've been, you know, a little lost and lacking in some direction, sometimes it turns out that once in a while you can show them the light in the strangest of places if you look at it right. So much fun. Really enjoyed getting a chance to have this conversation and the opportunity to share it. And I hope everybody enjoys listening to it as much as we enjoyed making it. Thank you to everybody for tuning in and I hope you enjoy. Bye. All right, this is it. We're in our spot.
Are we live?
Well, unless I edit this. So this is the return of Stranger Stopping Strangers podcast, episode number 74. And I have the most special guest I have ever had on this podcast, from the 21st century deadheads, which I love hearing their stories, to family members like Geralyn. I have my favorite person in this world with me as my guest, non-deadhead but music lover, my husband Robert Smith. Welcome.
Oh, I'm glad to finally be here, but you haven't had Bob on yet, so your favorite person.
Wait, not my favorite
person. It's musician. Arguable, but we haven't had Bob yet. But thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. I've been telling you, and you told me that you're full of shit. And I said, no, I really want to do it. I want to give this perspective of a deadhead spouse. In fact, I was thinking of making another family, similar to the deadhead family. It's going to be the family of deadhead spouse.
Yeah.
And we can talk about all of the things that we love and some of the things that we don't love about the deadhead family, the dead family. Whatever you guys call it.
I think it would be a Facebook page with a lot of traffic, a lot of content, a few trolls, and it would be a welcome addition to the social media world of the deadheads.
For well, sure. I've already talked to a few of these people, so it could be in the works, but we can talk about that later.
We can talk offline about that. Well, and I have talked about you, you know, on this podcast more times than not, because I always feel the need to say my husband's not a deadhead, but he loves really good music. And furthermore, you could have been a bigger fan of the Grateful Dead had I not burned you out on it. So fucking crazy.
What makes you think I'm burnt out?
Well, I want to start with a cute story, though, about when the bloom was on the rose. So this is mine, and then I want to hear a bunch of your stories because, you know, the podcast is more about the guest, and I can talk a dog off a meat wagon. But so me being a deadhead and you not being a deadhead was actually a really cool part of our wedding. And it was your brother's toast as part of the wedding when he said that he knew that you had found the one when you added a dead playlist to your playlist, because you had never had the Grateful Dead on any of your music playlists, and that when it popped up on your playlist, it was part of his toast, that you he had really realized you had found the one. And part of the toast, that you must really love this girl, because all of a sudden the Grateful Dead started popping up, and then that was probably the peak of your deadheadness.
Well, That's an interesting story. I wouldn't go as far as to say, well, I'm not a deadhead, but, you know, it was, strong words is probably the wrong thing to say, but there were a lot of Dead songs, and there are a lot of Dead songs that I really like. You know, like you said, being a lover of music, I was really fortunate growing up. My parents, born in 1945, and they had me when they were 21, my dad and 22. So, you know, do the math, the era they grew up in and the kind of music they listened to. And they were legitimate hippies, especially my mom, you know, with all the garb, you know, all the concerts. They saw Jim Morrison and the Doors, of course, the Stones back in the early 70s. So I was really fortunate that I was exposed to some great music growing up, vinyl. Which is a whole another story that we've been talking about. Everything from Harry Nilsson to the Supremes to Big Brother and the Holding Company to, you know, James Taylor. I was exposed to a lot of great stuff. And one of the things that I noticed when I was growing up was there was always this album in the collection, and it had a skeleton on it. And, you know, I started getting into heavy metal as well. Early Black Sabbath, 1968, Ozzy Osbourne, Tony Iommi. And I saw this album and I was thinking to myself, man, these guys must be really heavy. Look at this album. It's got a skeleton on the front. And, you know, it's got that doomsday look of heavy metal. So I put it on and, of course, Truckin' was on there. Casey Jones was on there. I knew those songs, but I was thinking, well, maybe these guys go heavy too. So I skipped over a few songs like we could on vinyl back in the day, and I put on this, song, and it was Rosemary, the song. And I was like, who the fuck are these guys? And,
that was your biggest, that was your intro into, they're fucking pranksters. That's what they are. They're fucking pranksters. I fucking love that album had Rosemary on it, because later on when we started talking about music and what are popular Dead songs and what aren't, you know, as we kind of started getting deeper into, you know, the catalog, and I'm listening to music, and you brought up Rosemary, and I never realized it was on that album. And I mean,
you were like, how the fuck do you know Rosemary?
This crazy obscure song, like, how is that in your, like, you know, familiar top 10 list? I've given it a lot of thought after that, and I mean, I really think it is just like the classic prankster. We have like 2 minutes to fill this in, and fuck you, record companies. We're just going to throw this in as a best of, and I don't know. It's always fucking cracked me up. So I think in the spirit of that for this podcast, we've decided to have Rosemary be the first song that we're going to play. Many of you hardcore album listening, you know, deadheads will know this song. People who started with the Skeletons from the Closet will know this song. And any of you who do not know Skeletons of the Closet or Live for Live Music will probably have never fucking heard Rosemary. So it'll be a little intro to one of the best ofs.
Blast from the past.
A blast from the past, from the early days.
My college days.
Let's go into it. And this is probably the first and last time you will ever hear Rosemary on the podcast as a song choice, but it fits in. So let's hear that. And then we have so many more stories, and we'll be back.
Was a window, she sat quite alone. All around her, the garden grew, scarlet and purple and crimson and last went away. The garden was sealed when the flowers decayed. On the wall of the garden, a legend did say, no one may from here, since no one may stay.
Listening to Rosemary, and you know, I'm going to set the scene too, because this is, the podcast has been on hiatus. I really was waiting for just like a comfortable, you know, warm environment. And so we are sitting here in on the workbench in the basement in our home, waiting for the dogs to bark, bong in front of us, though not partaking of it at this moment. And cozy in our little basement.
Where all the sins go on.
I'd say of the entire house, this is probably where we log in the most amount of time. I'll have to take
music,
a picture of it.
The bong.
Yeah, this is it. The door that can be locked from the kids. It's the only...
the safe that everything goes in.
So listeners, you are in our nook, which is a really dirty.
You wouldn't want to see a picture of
this. You can just imagine what a unfinished portion of a basement workbench, which has become the most beloved
there's
place.
There's a furnace, two oil tanks.
Yeah.
And a bunch of exercise equipment that doesn't get used.
Yeah, it's definitely the best room of the house. I like when we have people come over and Julie brings them down here and says, and this is where mommy locks the door. All right, so to get back on your Grateful Dead journey, which again, we have lots to talk about, but one of the biggest, you know, things about Deadheads again is live music versus studio albums. And, you know, I see the benefits of both, but, share a little bit about what your thoughts are.
Well, it was interesting. I started listening to some of the live music and I was like, God damn, this is a long fucking song. What the hell are these guys doing in the middle of this song? I'm not going to listen to this. I'm fast forwarding this thing. I'm just going to move the needle here and get to the end of the song. Then you made a really good point just in the last couple of days. It might even been yesterday when you said, I don't really like jam songs either unless I know the song. And I said, that makes sense because I realized a jam band that makes a lot of great music that I love, and it's the Allman Brothers. And we just listened to the song One Way Out, which, by the way, I think would have been a great cover song for the Dead to do.
We'll have to look and see if they did it.
Yeah.
Probably at some point.
Yeah, and so we just listened to it. And there's not a Grateful Dead-type jam, but maybe close. And long jam with Dickie Betts and Dwayne playing, jamming away. And then it really struck home where I said, now I understand what she's talking about. I was digging the whole jam all the way through. And, from a Grateful Deadhead perspective, now I get it.
And, I think it's one of the issues that I've had with, like, Fish. You know, like, Fish is one of those things that so many, if you love the Dead, you're going to love Fish. And, finally went to my first Fish show over the summer with Joe, if you're listening, Joe Rivera, my gay boyfriend who introduced me to Fish. And I loved the energy and the people, but I couldn't get into extended jams that I'm not familiar with. So I think it totally makes sense, because especially if you listen to the same recording over and over, you just become familiar with the jam. So it's all about knowing what's coming next and the familiarity of it.
Yeah, it's like when I hear songs, if I listen to a Beatles album, I know the next song before it comes on, unless you put the Abbey Road medley on shuffle, which fucks up the whole thing.
Yeah. Can't do it. No, absolutely. Yeah, no, again, I am down. I am one of those Deadheads that is kind of totally down for studio albums as well. I've been listening to actually a lot of studio albums lately. I mean, to listen to Wake of the Flood, and I mean, so many people we'll say American Beauty changed their lives. I mean, there's definitely some albums that I really dig the studio versions, just the aspect of what to expect, and it's just, you know, the meat and potatoes of the song, so it's not an argument.
You speak of changing your life and how music and how it's affected me, you, us, and now I can appreciate what Deadheads, how they get into it and dig the music and how much it means to them, because really the only band that's done that to me are the Beatles. And as much as you hear the Beatles, and as commercialized as some of their music is, has become, always was, I can still listen to that music like we did last night and find different things, different sounds, different lyrics. I can listen to that stuff every day, all day, from I Want to Hold Your Hand to Octopus's Garden to, you know, the entire album of Abbey Road, my favorite album. And always, to use a Dead term, become inspired.
And become inspiration, move me brightly. Well, so this is pretty funny because we, you know, on these podcasts, they're totally ad hoc. You know, we're sitting here, we're bullshitting. And I was waiting to get into the Beatles as like the fourth bullet point, but you have managed to bring it up in the first 10 minutes of talking. So. It didn't take long. We were going to talk through it and talk about the Beatles.
Well, every day from we get up in the morning and I see the Instagram pic, meme, to, you know, throughout the day and usually closing up the night in our little room of sin down here, it's a lot of Grateful Dead speak. However, on my end, not quite to the extreme on your end that you go through. But for me, it's talking about all that stuff. And we listen to each other's stories about it and the nuances and all the cool stuff. So I forgot exactly where I was going with this.
But the Beatles. You got to just bring the Beatles in.
Yeah.
Just like I'll turn everything into the Dead, you'll manage to tip it on its side to the Beatles.
Yeah, and you'll make me listen to music, and I'll pretty much make you listen to music,
but I love you, the
YouTube video. You do,
yeah,
of course.
I love
when
the
we
Beatles.
Get our tattoos soon, I'm getting the Beatles walking across Abbey Road. I forget what you're getting.
Face of some
yeah,
sort
you're getting a little
decided.
Steal your face somewhere.
Well, our daughter's name is Julia. I mean, I think when I was pregnant with our second and we were trying to come up with a girl name and we couldn't come up with a girl name and,
what about Althea?
Yeah. I mean, it could have been Althea. It could
what
have
about
been
Bertha.
You considered Cassidy for like a hot minute. We talked about Cassidy and you were going to concede because I was a completely hormonal bitch and you were like, fine, fuck it, name her whatever you want. And, our son's name is Joe and I just had a real issue with the two J's again, just kind of a hormonal moment, but I just couldn't stand it. It was the time when the Dugars were really popular and people would, all of their names were with a J.
Who were the Dugars?
The Dugars. It was like a reality show. The Dugars, and they had like 12 people in their family and all of their names started with J. And I was just felt really annoyed and self-conscious that both of my kids' names would start with J because Julia came up and I was like, I don't want it to both be J's because then as soon as the baby comes and people ask what her name is, I'll say Julia. And sure enough, when they were babies, the response was always like, you went with the J's. So I was pretty hesitant to it, but Julia was the perfect name. I mean, it was the, because I love the Beatles too.
Whenever we hear the song, we always think about it.
Yeah.
And since all the medication I'm on, I've become more emotional and it brings a tear to my eyes sometimes, as corny as that sounds.
Well, and in the sequence of Beatles songs, the song we played at our wedding was I Will, because that was the first song, because music is something that really brought us together. And I just, the song I Will is in sequence to Julia on the White Album. So I don't know. It's all kind of poetic and,
yeah, that's
and,
right.
And makes a, it's a little bit cosmic. So those two things go one and one A and honestly, I think I've shared this recently. So I apologize for a repeated theory, but we finally were able to nail down the Grateful Dead Beatles, which is the best band conversation. Cause I love the Beatles too, but I think I was able to articulate it and you agreed. I think our final decision on it was for innovation, for the amount of years together as a band, for what they created, what they inspired, what they brought to the table.
Different styles of music.
The different styles of
influence of drugs, LSD.
All of that, I give it to the Beatles first. I don't think the Dead would have been the Dead without the Beatles. But I'll say for studio, hands down Beatles, but for live music.
A lot of that music you could never recreate live.
Yeah,
you know, so. The rooftop concert, maybe sort of, but, you know, Lucy in the Sky, that stuff, never
The orchestra, the White Album. You couldn't play the White Album and get anywhere near.
And, you know, it was interesting. I had this music teacher at Westfield State, and this guy was such an asshole. I mean, he was arrogant, very smart, used to, you know, Mozart and Beethoven, and we had to listen to all that shit. And, you know, it was, for its time, you know, it's brilliant music, but I wasn't into that shit, and I guess I'm still not. And he couldn't stand the stuff that we were listening to. Keep in mind, this is 81 to 80, well, it took me 6 years to get out of college, so it was 81 through about 87. I remember one thing the guy said was, the only group that's worth a shit that you guys listen to are the Beatles. And I was like, huh? And he said, they use every single instrument ever invented on this planet. You know, cello, harpsichord, horn, you know, well, you know what I'm saying. Everything. And to your point, that stuff could never be recreated live.
Yeah, no, I give it to the Beatles. Studio Beatles. Live dead for 30 years of touring, for summer tour, fall tour, winter tour. I mean, as anyone who listens to this podcast
knows, the never ending tour,
you know, the Jerry on the side, the Rat Dog on the side. I mean, for musicians that just were out there playing live, a live band, greatest band on earth. But I will say the Beatles studio albums, innovation, influential, best band on earth. So they're like, you know, they're equal.
Yeah, for me, and I know this is a Grateful Dead podcast, but there's them, and then there's just everyone else so far down. I mean, that's how I...
Okay, so after hijacking this podcast to the Beatles, we will get back into the Beatles later because it ties into a later topic, but I do want to end this little part of the conversation up with the studio versus live. You picked a song, because I made you pick a Grateful Dead song other than the Rosemary, which was kind of a joke. So we kind of went through the list, and actually had a pretty good list. You had
I put together a playlist. I don't even know if you were aware of this, but there are, like a lot, well, I guess the thing I would say about the Dead is I have a lot of playlists on my, on Spotify. There are, in fact, I'm going to look at it right now. I mean, Traffic. Jimi Hendrix, Zeppelin, Chicago, of all bands, but you know their early stuff was pretty rockin' stuff.
Sabbath,
yeah, country music, not new country, but you know, Charlie Rich, stuff like that. Neil Young, of course, Crosby, Stills, Nash. There's a disco one here. the Bee Gees, Donna Summer, etc. The Supreme, Stones. Anyway, you get the point. I do like a number of Dead songs. There's probably a good 15, 20 songs that I like, and most of them are studio, but, you know, Bertha's a long jam that I like.
Yeah, Bertha. You had Mexicali Blues on there.
Yeah,
they're like some of my
Blues.
Least favorite. But I don't know. A lot of people love a Bertha. I like Bertha, but it's definitely not in my top 10. What's on the list? Mexicali Blues. Yeah, which I enjoy. But
I got it right here. It's 15 songs.
Let's roll them off, and then we'll play the one that you picked.
All right, U.S. Blues, Help on the Way, Slipknot, Bertha, Franklin's Tower, Alabama Getaway, Eyes of the World, Fire in the Mountain, Tennessee Jed, Althea. There's Bertha again. I guess there's two versions. West L.A. Fadeaway, Help on the Way, another version of Bertha.
Maybe we should play Bertha.
Estimated Profit, and, of course... Arguably, there's a lot of good choices. There really are. We have to narrow it down, but I would say my favorite, studio, of course, Shakedown Street.
So we're going to go do a little Shakedown Street, and which I always love. And I will agree, the studio version of Shakedown Street really has something appealing to offer. And my favorite Shakedown, I was just telling my sister, I think is Fat Man That Rocks podcast. My friend over there on Twitter came to me with the Civic Center 1989 April 2nd, which was also my 16th birthday. So I had that on the list as the most possibly perfect Shakedown Street. So a couple nights ago, I nailed you down and made you listen to it. And I said, what did you think? And you said, studio version. So then we play studio, and I dig that too. So let's go in and hear a studio version of Shakedown Street, and then we're going to come back and talk a bit more with a few more topics. Enjoy.
Thank you.
So back from listening to Shakedown Street, and the next topic is a big one. I mean, this is a topic that we talk about all the fucking time. So gotta, this is probably going to like hijack the rest of the podcast, but that's cool.
I might offend some Bob lovers.
No, I mean, I think anyone who loves the music and loves, you know, all about it. And, yeah. And honestly, this is a fun editorial. Everybody gets an opinion. It's not a, you know, we're not partisan over here. We like everything. We love Bob because Bob's Bob and Bob's an institution and Bob's touring. And
He's like a Paul McCartney type, you know.
Bob is out there, you know. I just saw the Wolf Brothers the other day and it was fucking amazing. Oh, Bob's a fucking institution. I love Bob and Bob has really just become this leader of the band that's, you know, carried this through. But that being said, all eyes go back to...
I'm going to hijack here. So... I made a playlist. That playlist that I just talked about, I don't know how closely or anybody who's keeping track of those songs, but I don't know. I had made a playlist a few years ago. Stacey made a pretty funny observation. She said, you know, out of those 15 or 20 songs, do you know that every single song was a Jerry song except for one, Estimated Profit? And I said, no, I didn't know that. That's a really good point.
Yeah. And again, I do not think you're alone with that. I do not think you're alone with that. And honestly, in the last couple of months, Jerry Garcia Band, I mean, amazing. You know, it's just a totally different catalog. But, I mean, Jerry has definitely, you know, soothed my soul more times than anybody. So again, it's not controversial, but I guess what you'll go into next might be a little bit more, which is your feeling that.
Well, as far as the Jerry thing goes, to me, I hope I don't offend anybody, but to me it would almost be like the Beatles playing without John or something like that. I mean, there's this, and I know a lot of your listeners will probably appreciate this, but, you know, there's a certain artist that you can really tell that they are an artist. When you hear that first note on a lead, when he breaks into a jam, or when he opens his mouth and starts singing, you know who it is immediately, the true sign of an artist. And when I hear a Dead song, you know, a Jerry song sung by Bob, I'm just immediately just like, oh God, I mean, it's, you know, it's great. The music's great. People are digging the music. I understand the family and all those intangibles that everybody has that goes to the concerts. But as a music lover, not a Deadhead, when I hear a song without Jerry, I just, there's just something missing. Cool songs, they sound good, but there's just something missing. And I think some of your listeners will appreciate this, just that distinct voice, the guitar. I mean, that to me is something I really miss on a jam. When I hear it, when Jerry's not playing guitar, you know,
I can't disagree. No, so, I can't disagree. And again, I've kind of busted open the JGB band catalog a lot in the last 6 months, like more than ever. And I probably played about equally as much.
Well, I think you heard me start playing it one time, playing a song. You had said to yourself, you know what? I had forgotten how great his solo stuff was. It's so unique, and one of the things I like about his solo stuff, and the Dead does this too, personally I think he does it more, is just the variety of music that he plays. Bluegrass, yeah, soul, funk, you know, and everything.
Gospel.
Yeah, gospel, and everything in between. And it's that unique style and styles of music, I think, that also separates him. Now, I know a lot of people probably think the Dead do the same thing, but I personally think he covers more genres.
Yeah, again, I think I wouldn't disagree with that. And I mean, I've just fallen more and more and more in love with his catalog. So I'm just, there's just something that's very healing about it.
And a lot of the musicians he played along with too. Yeah, just a plethora of different guys and girls that played all different styles of music as well.
Yeah, no, it's, I'm gonna go see Melvin this weekend, the keeper of the flame. I mean, and I am looking forward to hearing that music. I love it. I mean, and I hear Waiting for a Miracle or My Sisters, My Brothers. And I mean, those songs they're, it's like going to church, you know, they really are. So as much as a deadhead, I think being a Jew, there's a meme. I was just talking, I went to a flotation place. I did a float therapy yesterday. It was so fucking cool. For anybody who lives in the Western Massachusetts area, it's in East Hampton, and it's called Go With The Float, and I just had the best experience. So, little plug for my friend Steven at Go With The Float. It's so fun, really cool. But he and I were talking because he's just kind of gotten into Jerry Garcia Band, and I told him about the meme that's out there. I think you've seen it with like the Flow, the diner one. Like, yeah. We don't just play Grateful Dead. We have more options. We also play JGB. So yeah, I think it goes kind of part and parcel with deadheads to love it all.
Yeah. One other thing I'll say to digress a little bit is, however, all that said about Jerry, I remember, I kind of remember when we went to see Dead and Company up in Saratoga Springs, and John Mayer was playing, and I'm thinking, John Mayer, that guy's a pop artist. I think I've seen a couple of videos. I've heard some stuff. I've seen him in People magazine. I've seen all these good-looking women he dated, and I was thinking, why on earth is this guy playing? And he said, oh, wait till you hear him. And I was really blown away by him. Yeah. And, I always appreciated the music, but now I kind of understood, not even necessarily from the family standpoint, everybody getting together and that intangible feeling that all the deadheads get. But again, the music itself, I mean, it was great and he was rocking. Who's on keyboards now?
Jeff.
Okay. And we always make a kind of a joke. I brought this up a couple times. Kind of reminds me of Spinal Tap or something on keyboards. They've had some great players. I never understood, though, Bruce Hornsby.
Yeah. No, I mean, it wasn't my favorite. I think he was friends with the guys in the band. And
yeah,
he
was obviously a super talented guy. Well, but did he have the mullet and all that from the 80s and 90s?
It was
early,
a little bit. It was the early 90s. I mean, I think what happened, I can't say specifically, but my general feeling is that, you know, when Brent died, it was really tragic. And, you know, they had tours to play and things going on, and they were friends with Bruce. He had kind of sat in before. And
sure.
I think he was just a really talented keyboardist that they could, you know, loop in to keep the show going immediately. And then Vince Welnick, the final.
Oh, really?
No, Bruce was kind of like a pitch hitter. Bruce kind of came in after Brent died. He was a pitch hitter for a little while. And I think the whole showboaty keyboard style that you're not a fan of, I think it overpowered the music. Like,
well,
I think
some of that stuff, I mean, not necessarily with the Dead, but when I hear, for example, when Billy Preston played with the Beatles, I mean, you knew there was it wasn't Paul playing piano.
Yeah.
You know, it added a whole nother level to the music. And I don't know if that's the case with,
I mean, again, I certainly couldn't say for sure, but in my understanding of the folklore was that it was too much, you know, like it did a little bit of a hijack, you know.
That.
It kind of was like cool to have them in, but I mean, there's again folklore. This is all just editorial. This isn't I'm not an actual archivist, but when the Horns would play, Bradford Marcellus played, he was amazing, but there was a show that was like a New Year's Eve 1980 and Etta James played, and you know, they'd have all kinds of people playing, and I heard Jerry got annoyed when there were like these really strong instruments that came in, cause it kind of upset the balance of what they were used to doing.
Well, some people aren't going to understand this one at all, but when Ozzy Osbourne was playing, he had this great guitarist, Randy Rhoads, who was playing, who was tragically killed in a plane crash, and they had a guy, Zakk Wylde, fill in for him on tour. And during the tour, all you heard was Zakk with his over-the-top fills on guitar and these long, wild solos. Super talented guy, but really took away from, you know, the soul of a lot of that music and a lot of the cool stuff that they were playing, you know, if you were into metal at that time. So, I think that would be a similar analogy.
Well, I'll say my ultimate takeaway analogy would be like, it's like a recipe, right? It's like a recipe, and you like if you were making cookies and you know 9 chocolate chips in it, and if all of a sudden you had like 15 chocolate chips in the cookies, some people might like it, but
balance.
It's about the balance, and I think really talented musicians that come in and play with a band that's so gelled and you know seasoned and have their grooves, it's like
some of the great sports teams, you know. They play as a team, not as individuals.
Right. So somebody comes in and you get this MVP, but it upsets the balance of what it always was. So
yeah, my God, we signed this new free agent. We're going to be a great team this year. And the team sucks because, well, this guy took over the entire deal.
Well, that is exactly my philosophy on why Bruce came in hot and heavy like a hurricane and came right back out. They brought Vince in, and again, Vince, poor Vince. I mean, there was, after Brent died and Jerry's health and all of that, I mean, I think it was, that was going to be a tough run, you know, to really be able to pull that back out, because I think the best years were behind them at this point. I don't think anybody's ever requested a song post-92 on this podcast, so, yeah.
What about In the Dark? Was that post-92?
In the Dark was like, no, studio album 86.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I was in high school. I was invited to the concert at Springfield Civic Center. I was so engrossed in heavy metal music at the time. I was like, you're going to see those guys in Springfield? Small venue, 5,000-6,000 people. And in hindsight, now, I was like, why the fuck did I not go see those guys?
Well,
that was
fuck
crazy.
Didn't you go see those?
Yeah, I saw Jerry. In fact, speaking of Jerry, I remember my brother and I were driving to California. I chased a girl out to San Francisco who I met and followed her out. My brother and I drove out to in our car, obviously, 3,000 miles from Massachusetts to San Francisco. I will never forget it, as I'm sure most of your listeners will never forget it. It was like when John F. Kennedy was shot, I'm sure if you were alive then. When Jerry died, we had the radio on, and we were going through the Great Salt Lake. And if anybody's driven through the Great Salt Lake, it's salt as far as you can see, and I can still think of it today. What's the road? Is it 80? We were driving out, and it came through on the radio. It was kind of like when John Lennon was shot. Howard Cosell was on Monday Night Football, and he broke the news during a football game, New England Patriots, Miami Dolphins. John Smith was going up to kick a field goal. I can tell you exactly what happened. They said John Lennon was shot outside his hotel. Well, that's something I'm sure your listeners feel the same way. And I remember, not even being a deadhead, driving through the Great Salt Lake, and they interrupted whatever song was on or whatever news station was on and announced that Jerry had died. And in hindsight, I've always thought to myself, damn, why didn't I go see those guys? What the fuck was I thinking back then? But anyway, not to digress too much.
No, there's no digressing. I just got the chills. Well, it makes me sad. Yeah, it would, but you know, where there's death, there's still a regrowth, the family and the music, and
yeah, it's pretty impressive. I gotta say, when a lot of bands, when somebody dies in the band, that's it for a lot of these guys. But I gotta say, but like I say, I've used this word a lot, intangible. There's just an intangible thing about the deadheads, their community, that, it's really not surprising that the music continues to live.
Absolutely. Well, let's go and play your Jerry Garcia Band pick, your first of a couple Jerry Garcia Band picks. So tell everyone about the pick and why you picked it.
Well, a lot of reasons why. One of the things I loved about Jerry was all the different guys that he played with solo, all the different musicians, and like I was saying, all the different styles of music, soul, funk, bluegrass, you know, gospel, anything went, you know. It must have been, I don't know if therapeutic's the right word, but as an artist to escape, be able to do his own thing, you know, without, you know, a producer or somebody telling, no, this is the way we want it done, and him saying, fuck you, I'm in charge now, and this is what we're going to do. And that's one of the things I really liked about his solo stuff. In fact, I might be repeating myself, but I like Jerry's solo stuff better than the Dead. you know, as an artist.
You're repeating yourself as you do many times on this topic. You're really repeating yourself in the podcast. And yes. I think we've talked about it three times.
So so after midnight, I saw After Midnight on this album. I was looking up Jerry Solo stuff. This was even before Spotify. I had already known this song. I had seen it. I was like, After Midnight. Well, it's going to be fucking boring, you know. You know, it's a great song, but, you know, who hasn't covered this song? And, you know, it was a top 40 hit.
Who was the original?
Bob.
Bob Dylan?
Wasn't Bob?
I think After Midnight was a... All right, we're Googling it. I think... No, I think it's like a more of an R&B. I mean, I think of like Eric Clapton covering it as a pretty big cover. I don't think it's Bob Dylan. All right, hold on, listeners. I am not going to edit this out. We are now going to Google. Somebody's sitting here thinking about it, and they already know the answer. Who wrote?
J.J. Cale.
J.J. Cale, of course.
Awesome version. The original. Version. J.J. Cale, I forgot about him.
And then Eric Clapton was, so J.J. Cale.
And of course,
Eric Clapton
was
where I first
I forgot about J.J. Cale. Yeah, I used to listen to him a lot. Talk about a great artist. He had a couple other great tunes that were covered. And, you know, unless you were, really into that kind of music or really into those types of artists, a lot of people don't even know who he is. I'm sure a lot of your listeners do, but, anyway, so, I had heard, I saw it on there and I was like, ah, great, another cover. Jerry's version with Merle and, the keyboards. And like you said, you know, sometimes it can be overwhelming when you get somebody like that. But in my opinion, it's like when Billy Preston played with the Beatles, it adds a whole nother, I don't know if levels, but a whole nother, you know, another dynamic to the music. And I heard it and I was like, holy shit, this is the best version of this song by far. I love it. And,
I like the one
I'm
with the disco. Well, we're going to play that one for you. I kind of like the one with like the disco. It's the one that has like the real, like the beams in it. Like I think that one might be my favorite. There's really? Like a 70s kind of like a weird sort of groovy late. I don't know. Anyways, let's go in and play the, actually you were so generous that you told me to download the entire album that you loved it so much, not just the
single. Well, I don't know who the fuck's paying for that. That's going on your bill.
So we're going to go in and play the Jerry Garcia, Merle Saunders, After Midnight, and then come back with probably some more Beatles and Jerry topics, but that's cool. So everybody go and listen to this, and then we will be back in just a minute.
A FOA. After midnight, gonna sing of a child. Gonna cause talk and suspicion. Give an exhibition. Find out what it's all about. After midnight, we gonna let it all. Thank you.
So back from listening to After Midnight, and we did pull up the Google on this song of J.J. Cale, and it's a pretty impressive list of musicians that covered this.
I had his vinyl. I had the album. Yeah, pretty cool stuff. After Midnight, Cocaine by Eric Clapton, Call Me the Breeze, covered by Skynyrd. Call Me the Breeze was covered by John Mayer. I didn't know that. Johnny Cash. Waylon Jennings, I Got the Same Old Blues Again. That he wrote that, covered by, man, Captain Beefheart, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Freddie King, Brian Ferry. You know, on and on, his music was covered by Jose Feliciano, again, Joan Shelley, even Kansas covered one of his songs. So, great artist. We'll have to listen to him more often.
Well, and I love uncovering, like, who wrote a lot of songs that people don't even, you know, fully realize. I mean.
So many times we listen, we like the covers better, but I think on some of these songs, you might like the original better with some of JJ's songs.
My favorite songwriter who I pretty much prefer the cover, like pretty much every time. We have talked about this. We have turned this over. We have turned this around. We have pulled up, you know, different versions of everything. And, you know, I think I may have gone on record saying this before on the podcast, but I will say it again. Bob Dylan.
One song I disagree with. Maybe not. Hurricane and Tangled Up in Blue, although Jerry's version of Tangled Up in Blue is pretty fucking good. Yeah. Well, of course you do.
I think Hurricane. Hurricane is the only song that I think Bob Dylan sang it best, but every other fucking song. I mean, he wrote the best music, but from Simple Twist of Fate to All Along in the Watchtower to Knocking on Heaven's Door to, I mean, you name it. I mean, he wrote it and then somebody else sang it better.
He's playing with Neil this year on tour in London, Wembley Stadium, Neil Young and Bob.
Two of like the absolute greatest with like the biggest control freaks
whatever.
Ever.
Don't bring a camera to Bob's shows.
Don't bring
whatever you do for you listeners.
I wonder how he'd be able to manage somebody having a camera at Wembley.
60,000 people.
It'll be like some guy like midway back in the stands at the security. Excuse me, Bob is not good to do with the English.
I'm only playing during the day. I don't want to see any fucking flashbulbs.
Oh my god. No, like if you open up the light illuminates it all, because we have a friend who saw him at the Beacon last December, I want to say, and he literally got kicked out of the venue.
Who was it, Dan?
Dan got kicked out of the Bob Dylan. He got kicked out of the venue and put him in like a penalty box for like two or three songs before they let him come back in, as he had pulled out his phone to like take a picture. And he didn't even know the songs.
He's probably used to doing that at Timberlake concerts or something. Dan doesn't know, you know.
Dan doesn't know, but yeah, Bob Dylan, hard, fast rule. And then, I mean, Neil Young is so, it's kind of nuts.
Neil
about
could
that
be the same
too.
Way.
He is. Remember that we were listening to the old recording of, it's a fucking funny one. It's from Live at the Massey, and I forget which song.
Massey Hall.
And this
wasn't a telephone. This was one of those big fucking flashbulbs.
Yeah, and he schools the person and is like, could you please put your camera away and take it out when the song is over and everybody's clapping like you're supposed to. Like, he completely shames the guy into putting his camera away on the recording. There'll be a real daily double, the two of them trying to manage all of the cell phones.
I wonder
Stadium.
If they even like each other.
Two alpha cats. But again, all this is said in jest and fun, because two of the biggest legends out there as far as a musical living legends out there.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, there, how many more
respect.
Are there, you know? I mean, Paul.
Bob.
I guess you could say Ringo. I mean, whenever I listen to the Beatles, I always forget. I'm like, you know, Ringo had some good tunes, and his pop music during the 70s was great pop music. Back then. I mean, they all had their thing.
Definitely, it's all about the energy, which is why the Dead shows are so fucking awesome.
Oh, that's why I was bringing it back around, man. How the artists feed off of the energy of the crowd.
Yeah, and I think like I've really given a lot of thought. I saw a lot of Dead and Company in the last couple of years. I mean, you know, again, that could be a whole nother conversation about your wife is spending thousands of dollars and traveling all around the country, which you've been so patient with, and I'm not anticipating seeing that much in this coming year. No, I'm really not. We'll see how it unfolds, yeah, but I have no summer tickets purchased. No, last year I had it all fucking mapped out.
It's fucking February.
No, last year I had them all mapped out. I bought them, I had the plans, like, no, it's coming around, and I'll see some shows.
You plan your work like that.
I did. I mean, again, it's a new, you know, it's a new year, new vibes. But I think what I like the most about going to the Dead & Company is the big family gathering. I mean, it's just that massive energy, because there's a lot of arguments that can be made for, you know, JRAD versus Dead & Company versus, you know, local things and small venues, and everyone has all kinds of opinions, and none of them are wrong. But I think the thing about the Dead & Company that sucks me in, that I love, is just being with, you know, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 people, because you just draw from that energy.
Right, I think I alluded to it earlier. That's that intangible thing. I mean, I don't know a lot about them. I do like some of their music, but I guess Fish would probably be a band like that. Otherwise, I really can't think off the top of my head anyway about any other bands that have that that following, that family, that crowd, that energy, you know, that love. All the characters that everybody knows. I mean, I could go on and on about these people who,
all the internet characters.
You know, all these people that you tell me about. I've never met them, but I could tell you everything about a lot of these people. And I don't think there's any other band that has that. It's amazing. After all these years.
No, absolutely. But I know you think I'm full of shit, but I really have been enjoying the local vibes. I mean, I like being.
It's a lot of great local stuff.
It's a lot of great local stuff. And I like being, you know, looking around and being like, all right, this is like small, it's intimate, it's local, and it's a lot less expensive. So
yeah.
I think this year is going to be, more about like great bands that are playing the music where, I mean, God, we went to a place, me and my friend Deirdre, when we went to the Lusitano Club. I mean, that had to have been the worst venue.
I think I went
to
a couple of bachelor parties there.
Oh my God. It's
80s
like
and 90s.
Club that's like mostly for retirement parties and banquets. And I mean, again, no disrespect to Ludlow, Massachusetts, the Lusitano Club, but, local band, another little plug out there, Lobsters from Mars. I mean, they are really awesome. And I mean, to be able to get out and dance your ass off in the worst venue ever is a testament, man, to, it was good. I mean, it was good. And man, if you can rock it out in that bad of a venue, like, you're a pretty talented musician. Cause I mean, I had no complaints by the time this show was over. So it was all good. Well, we're going to play one last song and we will wrap it up. So, you know, of course, we've talked a lot about the Beatles, a lot about the Dead. And so the natural, you know.
And Jerry.
And
solo.
Jerry solo. So the natural closing song has got to be, we pull it all together.
Okay. Right on. Yeah. It's Dear Prudence by Jerry Garcia Band.
It's awesome.
Yeah. It's a great version. It's a great song. But his version, you know, it's like a lot of Jerry, probably all of Jerry's covers, it's got his own touch on it, and this one definitely does. And I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, oh, he covered this, and I heard it, and I was like, holy shit, this is fucking awesome. I love this. It's great. Not quite. There's a lot of covers that I say to myself, oh, this is better than the original. I don't know if this is better than the original, but it's Jerry's take on it, what makes it fucking great. And that sound I talk about, and that voice, and that guitar, and, you know, just his soul that goes into it. It's awesome.
No, I love it. I love it. I love it. It's on my playlist. I listen to it over and over and over and over. Love it. Love it. Love it. This song always makes me think of my sister too, because we always joke about, Beatles run deep and all of the names in our families. I mean, all of my ringtones are Beatles songs, and Michelle was named after Michelle, my bell. And we remember us laughing. It's a good thing that Mom and Dad's favorite song wasn't Dear Prudence, because
yeah.
Michelle was definitely a name, you know, back in the 70s or 80s. I think a lot of people were inspired by Michelle, my bell. So definitely a better name than Prudence for that era.
What about Bertha?
Bertha would have been, you know, it would have been a tough, that would have been a big name to carry along with you. Gosh, we have Lucy the dog, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, Marie Smith. We got Michelle. We got Julia. So, a lot of ring. What are some of the ringtones? We got, you've got, When I'm 64. It's a fucking awesome ringtone. Mm. God, your mother should know. It's my mom's.
Well, whatever you do, don't put one of your favorite songs as an alarm clock in the morning as you wake up, because you'll never listen to the fucking song again.
Yeah, we fucked up with that one too. Our kids are horrified by "Good Morning, Good Morning." We tried that one, and they won't listen to it. And Harry Nilsson, "Gotta Get Up." Like, those two songs, we can't listen to them anymore.
No.
Yeah. They're like, "Don't put that song on!"
Yeah. Remind me of either being hungover or getting the kids up for school.
No. I've wanted to put "I'm Only Sleeping," but I can't ruin another song on a ringtone, not an alarm song. Sorry. Well, let's go in and play that last song, and then we'll come back and do a little sign off and goodbye.
Thank you. blessing. Thank you.
So we are back from Dear Prudence, and this is the point where I thank my guests for coming on. So thank you for this. I really thought you were fucking with me for the last year or two that you wanted to be a guest.
I wanted to. I knew what I was going to say. I jotted down a few notes here, but there was a lot of things that I wanted to say. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I think it was my idea. I said I want to be on.
You've been saying it for like 2 years.
I want to give my side of the story, you know. Because, you know, I give you a lot of shit about this stuff, but there's a lot of stuff I dig about it, and I like it just as a music lover, you know? I'm never going to be in the front row trying to get on the rail. I could give a fuck about that, but I would be digging the music like I dig all kinds of music. So there's a lot of good stuff that I like, and furthermore, I'm so proud of you. When you told me that you were going to do this podcast, I was like, well, that's cool, you know, that's great to do the podcast, you know, you might as well, why not? And then when I saw the response that you've got in your Instagram following,
10,000
today, holy shit, and I tell some of my friends about it, Jeff, my buddy who I was out with last night, and he was just, he couldn't believe it. No, I know. I mean, you're intelligent. It's something you're passionate about. So in hindsight, it's not all that surprising, but I'm really proud of you and I love you. And,
Oh, I love you too. And very appreciative of letting me, wave my freak flag out here in, Massachusetts. I have seen a lot of music. We have two kids. I have had a full-time job, the podcast, and you have been really supportive about letting that all go down, because that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of travel, a lot of time, a lot of sharing my family with that family.
Have I inspired you?
You've inspired me. My inspiration is has been moved me brightly. So on that note, thank you for tuning in, everybody, and thank you for being my 74th guest and my my comeback, because we haven't done a podcast in quite some time.
So. Yeah, well, long overdue. Thank you for having me.